I'm Northwest Arkansas Business Journal editor Paul Gatling, and welcome to our Technology Roundtable. We're inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at radio station KUAF-FM in downtown Fayetteville. I want to quickly introduce to our listeners our panel for today's discussion on all the trending topics in the technology industry. Meredith Lowry is an intellectual property attorney in Rogers with Wright Lindsey Jennings. Is a co-chair of the Northwest Arkansas Technology Summit. Joe Earhart is the founder and CEO of Springdale Financial Tech Company, 3E Software. And Brad Girard is a senior director of engineering and technology at J.B. Hunt in Lowell. Welcome to all three of you. It's great to have you with us today to talk technology. Before we dive into some discussion, let's just go around the table here. Real briefly, just tell us about a little about your work as it relates to technology, Joe. Start with you first. 3E Software is a fintech company, financial technology. Just give us an overview of that business and the software that you use to help community banks.
Yeah, absolutely. So 3E Software, we're a SaaS company. We essentially create one software. It's called Teslar. And it's a back-end software that most people will never see but the bankers. So it's really geared around helping community banks with commercial lending. So, you know, a large $1 million-plus building and facility, helping take that loan from the first day the officer talks to the customer to the day that that loan pays off, or in a poor case, maybe going to special assets or something else. So it's managing a cradle to grave, essentially.
All right, okay. And Brad, J.B. Hunt, really no longer just transportation and logistics company like a lot of larger enterprises. You're a technology company. What does your work involve at J.B. Hunt?
That's right. So I'm one of four of our application leaders in our engineering and technology area, and so responsible for building our J.B. Hunt 360 platform. And that's really, you know, a marketplace for us to bring our shippers and our carriers together in order to streamline that workflow for them.
Okay, and to underscore that point, the company on the verge of finishing construction later this year of a big new technology center on campus?
We are, and so that says a lot. We are engineering and technology. We're getting our own building on that campus. It's one of the four buildings out there. So we're excited to move into that July this year.
And Meredith, what is your practice focused on as it relates to technology?
Retail technology. So that includes product development, tools that vendors or retailers may use to sell to people or provide services.
Okay. Let's talk about first, Meredith, and I'll start with you, something that we discussed a couple of days ago, some legislation coming out of the recent General Assembly in Little Rock, Arkansas House Bill 1944, which deals with, get ready for this word, blockchain. Hear a lot about that. Blockchain custody and smart contracts. You know, something the governor mentioned in a blockchain conference in Fayetteville, actually, a couple of months ago. First, before we get into that, what is a primer on blockchain? Go. 10 seconds or less.
So blockchain is a distributed ledger that is authenticated across multiple networks. And for our purposes in smart contracts, it's allowing retailers or logistic companies to transport goods and have those smart contracts be a part of the process.
Right. So it's record keeping. I mean, that's what at the core of what blockchain is, your record keeping. All right. So Governor Hutchins said if that bill was passed by the legislature, he would sign it. It was passed.
It was passed.
Where are we now with it, and why is that important for businesses that it is signed?
I'm not sure if it's gone into effect yet, but it will soon. It's going to be one of those things making Arkansas more friendly for smart contract use. And that was the goal of the people that proposed the bill, to be able to make Arkansas more blockchain friendly. There's a lot of other uses for blockchain in our area of the world. And so this was one of the first steps to making those become reality for Arkansas.
All right, a lot of other uses. Anybody else want to weigh in on blockchain technology with financial technology services or transportation logistics? Either you guys want to weigh in there?
Yeah, so I mean, I would just say, you know, I view it, to sum it up, as just one version of the truth in supply chain management.
Yes.
And that's what everybody's looking for. J.B. Hunt has a piece of that supply chain, but there's a lot that happens before it gets on one of our trucks. And so being able to make that visible to our customers is something that I think they're wanting blockchain to enable. And I think it will, but we need more people using it in order to do so.
Right. Maybe more people using it and have a grasp of how best to use it and how to
That's
use
right.
the application. Yeah.
That's been a big thing with all of my practice, was that version of the truth and having that work into intellectual property and rights management too. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, in blockchain, you know, everybody thinks about it financially because of Bitcoin, things like that. But the biggest challenge for community banks and banks in general with blockchain is just the word we used before, was just distributed. Most people don't want their finances or records distributed to multiple people, even though everybody wants one version of the truth. So there is definitely practical uses of blockchain. I think financial technology outside of like a Bitcoin or something like that, other people are trying, there's still a lot to be discovered of how. Like, what does it make sense? How do you keep it secure? Security is always top of mind, especially if you let other people outside of the trusted bank hold data.
Right, so and I think that's why we're seeing a lot of blockchain conferences just popping up here. The U of A sponsors blockchain conferences. They have a blockchain, dedicated blockchain person they've hired with us just in the past year now to come onto campus. Brad, I want to go back to, you know, we've reported on JB Hunt 360, the technology platform. Just give us an overview of that system, you know, in kind of, you know, broad terms, and how that's improving the business, which is transportation and logistics. How does that, how does that make you better?
Yeah, and so I mentioned it, you know, in my intro that, you know, we're bringing our shippers and our carriers together through one platform. And, you know, something that the smaller carriers or shippers don't have are the those things that you're your larger supply chain management transportation providers have. And so it's a way for us to push that out to them. And then you think about what drivers are concerned about, and our Carrier 360 is our focused towards our small carriers in the JB Hunt 360 platform. Those drivers want to be driving and making money. They don't want to have to worry about what that next load is. And so if we can recognize based on their location, what their preferences are on a next load, where they want to be at that next load, then that's a win for them, and it gets them in and out of those shippers.
What are you finding has been the feedback that you're getting from your drivers when you start to introduce new technology and put in front of them with guys and girls who maybe aren't used to a lot of change? Just get them on road and let us drive.
That's a great question, and I mean, it's an exciting time to be in transportation right now, because I would say we were primed for technology. You see a lot of startups breaking out, and you know they're all over. But what they don't have is the experience that JB Hunt has. And but you're spot on with you know, getting that into the hands of the drivers, and you have all spectrums that are out there. But it's back to, you know, we're in a do-it-yourself kind of world now. There's an app for everything, and that's what our Carrier 360 app does. It's easy for the drivers to use. And we think it's a real game changer.
Right. You mentioned do it yourself. That includes, you know, final mile delivery, something you guys have invested in even recently.
Right. And so that's all part of our Carrier 360 as well. And so, you know, where it was focused on those our brokerage carrier relationships, we also provide that to our intermodal dray carriers as well. And then down to the final mile carrier. They can do all their day-to-day activities inside that Carrier 360 mobile app.
Right. Okay. Joe, from your perspective as a small business owner, let's talk jobs. You know, we report a lot at the Business Journal on employment numbers and the lack of skilled workers in general, no matter what the sector is, transportation or construction, healthcare. A lot is said about the lack of skilled workers. Is that true for technology companies in Northwest Arkansas?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, as a young company, we're continuously growing, but, you know, we have about four positions open right now. And
how long have they been open?
Well, it depends on the position. So if we have a position like we had an executive assistant position open, we got a lot of apps, we could close it quickly. But if we're looking for a senior programmer that maybe has some machine learning, that'll take forever. Or even for us, if we're looking for an experienced banker that is a technologist as well, that wants to help us with installation, we've had those jobs open for months. And we find it, you know, we don't recruit from our customers, of course, so that makes a little bit of a challenge. But Northwest Arkansas, there's a lot of opportunities. And so our belief, as I tell my people as we're hiring, is that we're not going to hire somebody that doesn't have a job. You're going to have to pluck them from somewhere. So go, you know, in the economy here. So that's our challenge, is we've got to be able, as a small company, reach people at their job today who's not looking, and then make it exciting for them to want to come to a small company and work there, you know, where they may be used to more of a corporate culture, bring them down to, hey, everyone's got everyone's back, but at the same time, everyone's got to do everything. as a small kind of aggressive company. So it is without a doubt one of our top challenges.
If you could look in that pool of candidates that you're drawing from to fill those four positions, and you could tap all of them on the head with one skill that they would need to work for your company, what would that skill be?
So that's easy for our company. It's not skill. I guess I'll do skill, but the very number one attribute we require, because we handle all the personal data of our banks, is trust. So that's number one. Everyone has to be trusted. If you can't be trusted, you can't work there. But the real skill, not the quality, I would say, is a go-getter. We want people that will figure it out, get it done for the customer, and not say, it's not my job. You know, that's really our number one skill outside of that trust factor. You've got to be trustworthy, then you have to have initiative and go get it.
Right. Meredith, from your perspective, I know attracting technology talent to this region is a passion of yours, specifically making this an attractive place for women in technology. As the female representative at this roundtable today, what is your perspective on key ingredients for not only attracting women to Northwest Arkansas for jobs, but retaining women here once they have those jobs?
An awareness of the need for women to be in technology. And I think the area has an awareness of that. I know certainly J.B. Hunt, Walmart, Tyson are working actively to attract female technologists to the area. But then also we have to have education and more opportunities beyond just the big three in the area, because sometimes those women want to branch out and create a startup. So the area itself has to be hospitable, and they have to feel like there's going to be those opportunities for them.
Okay. Where does the region rank 1 to 10, let's say, in that regard?
We are not in the top 10, but Kansas City is. Kansas City's number 2, and so that's not that far from us. And there are a lot of attributes that Kansas City has that we share. So I think we can get there.
Right. Proximity to Northwest Arkansas, that's not that far away, right? Brad, as you're reaching into these new areas of technology, you mentioned it's going pretty fast. You're introducing new technology all the time. How do you manage that that risk factor? You know, when you're taking new chances and introducing new technology to your company on the large scale, when should you take the risk? When should you play it safe? How do you balance that?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a good answer to that because you can throw any cliche out there. If you're not innovating, you're dying. And if you're not a little uncomfortable in this space, you're probably not doing the right things. And so, it just comes down to, no idea is a bad idea. Let's go and vet it the right way. And, we have a methodology that we follow, and we pilot all of those ideas in a smaller base and then look to execute it pretty quick because, I mean, in the transportation world, I can equate it to how technology is. If you step out of it for any length of time, it's going to run you by. And that's really what's happening in the transportation market. So we've got to make those decisions quick and get something out there if we believe it to be a game changer.
Yeah, you can't just play it safe for a week or two or a month at a time. You can't sit on the bench for that long.
Because the others are doing it.
That's right. Yeah. Meredith, as an advisor, as a counselor, attorney for some companies who maybe be weighing the risk versus playing it safe, what would you advise to that question as far as taking risks in technology?
I would find mentors in the space as well. I mean, it's risks are inherent in technology. You have to take them. But also that having a mentor can mitigate that risk to a certain extent, at least you have someone else to talk to. And mentorship has been proven to make startups more successful.
Right. Joe, this is purely a fintech question, so I just put this to you. It's probably one that you hear a lot. What is the, you work with community banks, work for community banks. What is the future of community banks versus competing with financial technology companies or large U.S. banks? How do they compete in the evolving technology landscape?
That's a great question. It's actually the number one fear, I would say, not the number one, but a lot of things that the community banks look at. Because from a dollar standpoint, a community bank, it sounds like a large dollar, but even a $500 million community bank, when you talk about the large banks, you're talking about Wells Fargo, Bank of America, that are $2 trillion in assets. I mean, that's not the same ballpark of what you could even do technology-wise. So community banks have to rely on their number one strength. And that number one strength is it's not going to be AI. It's not going to be machine learning. It's not going to be automation. It's going to be, honestly, one-to-one relationship building, getting to know their customers. So community banks, their pivot is doing what they've always done, but backing that up with technology. Being able to go out, you know, have a coffee with a customer and say, hey, I know the big guys, their automation is going to say it's no good, but I know you, I believe what you're doing, I know the community, I know it's going to support this, and I'm going to be here to have your back. But I'm going to make it easy. It's not going to take 3 weeks, I'm going to make it take 2 days. So for community banks to really survive, not just kind of, you know, not to just to survive, but to really thrive, they've got to do what they do best. And that is build amazing relationships with their community, with their customers. But they got to back it with technologies, because the modern customer is not going to accept, hey, you'll get back to me in 2 weeks, or hey, I don't know where it's at, or hey, I can only talk to you at 9 a.m. You know, if a modern customer wants to start the process at 3 in the morning, then you as the community bank have to support it at 3 in the morning.
Right.
And that's really where community banks can win. And now fintechs, the thing for community banks is they need to stop looking at them as competition and look at how they can partner with them, because they're doing some really neat things that could drive that space forward.
How receptive are community banks to that way of thinking, that approach?
Oh, without a doubt, not.
Is that changing? Are their attitudes changing?
It's definitely changing. 3E was lucky enough to be in the ICBA's first accelerator that they did. And the ICBA represents the community banks of the country, essentially. And so just getting remember the ICBA is ran by the bankers, by the CEOs. That's their board, executive board. And so getting them just to that mindset, okay, we've got to do something. So their mind's changing, but always in banking, risk is always number one. Not just loan risk, but reputation risk, technology risk. So as a banker, it's tough. So, you know, a lot of times bankers didn't want to be bleeding edge. They wanted someone else to do it. And then once you could prove it worked, they would copy it. But community banks are now kind of stepping up saying, okay, we need to have technology that serves us, not the same technology of Bank of America. It will not work for the community bank. We've got to build our own that works for the way we do business.
Okay. We've got big business and small business, both sides of the scale at this table today. What should any business of any size be thinking about when it comes to technology? Is it security or data privacy? Is it blockchain that we've discussed? Is it the cloud? Is it, you know, what should a business be thinking about here going forward in technology?
Yeah, so I mean, security is a big one. We've seen what security, and when you put your head in the sand, what security can do to the large corporations. I mean, you got to figure out what your value is. What is it? And it's back to, you know, what idea are you going out there with, and what's the value behind it? So,
Meredith?
Data privacy is important. With a lot of companies here locally, especially small companies, it's not always a big concern, but it should be. I mean, there's new legislation coming out of California that's going to be impacting even us. And the GDPR may not affect many people in this area, but we're going to get there eventually. And it's not going to be as easy as GDPR. I can't even imagine us actually, the federal government, passing something as small as the GDPR. But we'll get there, and that's going to be a big focus. Right. It would be better to be proactive now than to wait for those things to hit.
Right. Keep your head out of the sand, like Brad said, so to speak. Joe, you're a fintech company. I'm sure data and privacy, those are first things you think about when you get up every day and go to bed at night.
Well, trust me, it's my worst nightmares, too. Yeah. I love security, so I do a lot of studying. But what people have to realize is you don't have to go crazy. Almost all the major data breaches, you can only name a couple that were probably government-sponsored. Most of the massive data breaches you read about, even like the Target one, were simple things that should have never occurred. So if you can just do those simple things every day and continue it, then most of the attacks will be prevented. You know, people think, oh, I've got to spend all this money, it's going to put me out of business. But no, it's just you've got to be on top of it. Don't make it an afterthought. Most people just didn't think about it, and if they would have done just something very simple, you know, they wouldn't have had a data breach. So, I mean, I hate to say, this sound not kind of, I'm not trying to underwhelm it, but just most data breaches occur from something that should have never been allowed to happen.
Right. Something as simple as adding the line item on the budget to address it. Maybe in some instances you've got to pay for what you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you're all from Northwest Arkansas. Meredith from Fayetteville, and Brad's from Rogers, and Joe, you're from Pea Ridge. So,
well, I'd say Springdale now.
Or Springdale, okay. Well, just kind of what does it mean to you to be able to kind of guide or shape the technology discussion in your hometown? I mean, you all have obviously seen a lot of change in Northwest Arkansas growing up here, many different levels. You're helping advance this region through the use of technology now. How does that feel?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, you know, growing up, I always thought I would leave this area. And once grown up, there's no place better than Arkansas. Northwest Arkansas is, you know, we continue to grow. We are, and the Big Three we spoke about, I mean, the Big Three are bringing in some more technologists. I mean, they're popping up. And so it's still hard to find those technologists. But it's great bringing people into this area, and they get a little glimpse of what Northwest Arkansas has to offer. And it just takes that. If you can get them here one time to see, you know, it's a little piece of heaven that we have, and it's a well-kept secret, I think. But it also is challenging to get folks here. But when you see that, I don't know, it's rewarding to be a part of that in our community.
Yeah, the Big Three companies, certainly their solar system drives a lot of the discussion up here, and it's getting bigger and bigger. We talked about the recent plug-and-play announcement that they're going to set up a logistics and supply chain accelerator here. They have five offices in the Western Hemisphere, and one of those is going to be in Northwest Arkansas. That just stuff like that just it blows my mind a lot. Meredith, you've...
I love this place, and so it's nice to be able to bring in that love for Arkansas and also my love for technology, try and bring more people here. It's one of those things, early on, my mother used to tell me, if you don't push for it, it's not going to change. And if my desire is to have more women technologists in Arkansas, then I'm going to have to scream about it.
Right. Joe, you could probably take your company anywhere and do what you're doing and set it up and be just as successful. But you're here in Northwest Arkansas in a growing business in Springdale. It's where you grew up. That's got to be especially rewarding to you.
Yeah, I mean, if we were logistics, supply chain, you know, consumer packaged goods, this is the mecca area to be. As a bank fintech, it's not so. I mean, Little Rock actually has a lot more fintech background than Northwest Arkansas does. But I grew up, I mean, I was born in Fayetteville, lived in Elkins, lived in Bentonville, went to school there, and then graduated high school in Peerage and now live in Springdale where my kids go to school. So I consider the whole area my home. Mm-hmm. I don't claim one city over the other. And to me, as I said earlier, you know, Brad said earlier, it's an amazing area. It's awesome. I don't see it anywhere else. And as I tell people, you know, like Springdale, why not Fayetteville or somewhere else? I was like, hey, if Springdale's going to get technology, someone's, you know, companies have just got to push it in the town. I said, we'll stay here as long as I'm in charge, and we'll keep pushing technology in Springdale, even if, you know, at the end of the day, Springdale's more known for potentially the Tysons than chickens. We're still going to push it because that's where, you know, I live and my family lives. So that's kind of what the mentality of this area has been, is we don't have to go somewhere else. We can make it here, and that's what I love.
Well, the Northwest Arkansas marketers will be glad to hear you say you're from Northwest Arkansas. You're not pinning yourself to any one particular town. We're all for one and one for all, right? All right, well, just kind of final thought time here. You know, what's the next big idea or tech disruptor that each of you are keeping an eye on most in terms of how it will affect your business, your company, or your career? You know, what are you watching the most, Joe? Any what fintech trends are on the horizon that you're most mindful of right now?
So there's two fascinating payments, but I won't get into that. That's an interesting one. But for actual community banks and banks, most of the cores that underwrite all the banks were written in the 70s. And there's a big push to make a modern banking core, make it shared data so that you can take your customer data from one bank to another. There's a couple that started recently. Europe's been doing it for a while, but there's not very many banks in Europe comparatively to the U.S., so that would be fascinating to me because that would really disrupt the Jack Henrys, the FIS, the Fiservs, the Big Three that kind of control that market. The idea of allowing an open core, as you would call it, where the bank, where the customer can say, I want all my banking data to go from here to here. Think about same kind of thing you would in medical. I want all my files to go from provider A to B, but now do it with all your bank records. And so it's a very fascinating subject. No one knows where that could go, but there's a lot of push for it. Is to say we shouldn't have consumers locked to their bank because that's where they've been for 10 years. So that to me is very fascinating where that will go.
Okay. My mind went to Y2K for some reason when you said 1970s and bank codes, and I hope I'm way off base there. We don't need to go through anything like that again. Brad, what's on the horizon for transportation?
So for J.B. Hunt, we feel like we've got a game changer with our J.B. Hunt 360 in the marketplace, but you know, we've got all this data, and what do we do with it? And you know, we've got to continue to optimize our network and drive out waste. And so it's easy to say we'll do that through artificial intelligence and machine learning, but you still have to figure out, you know, what it is you're looking at. And so, I mean, just continuing to refine those optimization models so that we can drive out that waste is a big focus for us.
Right. Still, the human element will never go away. Right. Meredith?
Machine learning and artificial intelligence, it's always been something I'm fascinated with, but in the legal world, too, we're using these things to find infringement issues. And it's way better than me spending hours hunting down an infringer, but it's being used in remarkable ways. So I'm really excited.
All right, very good. Well, Meredith, Brad, Joe, it's been a great discussion. Really appreciate you being here with us today. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having us.
All right, we appreciate you tuning in. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.